Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
People are feeling their responsibility. You will now say because you love the Nigerian police, you're feeling his duty, you keep him on the job. You know, lives are being lost daily. People that we know are losing family members to insecurity. And incompetence is like a stray bullet. We don't know who is going to be the next victim.
A political pressure group petitions Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari to fire all top security officers for failing to keep citizens safe.
The people of Ghana did not participate in that 2.5% share. Why should we participate when you have run the economy a ditch? So therefore, it is the responsibility of the government to bring in prudent measures that do not impose hardship on the people of Ghana.
A Ghanaian group comes out against a new tax on electronic transactions.
I think going to Rwanda is a great opportunity for us, the Zimbabwean teachers, because the salaries that are being offered in Rwanda are far much better than what we are getting in Zimbabwe. I also see it as an advantage again because traveling costs, that is to and from, will be covered by the Rwandan government.
And Rwanda aims to recruit nearly 500 Zimbabwean teachers by September. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The political pressure group concerned Nigeria for the protection of human rights and rule of law has petitioned President Muhammadu Buhari to fire all top security officers for failing to keep citizens safe. The group says the officers should use the recent train attack to fire the security chiefs or force them to step down. The demands come after gunmen recently attacked a train between the capital Abuja and Kaduna. The Nigerian Railway Corporation says the gunmen killed 8 passengers, 26 were injured, while many others were abducted. Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He tells me the attack is the latest indication of the worsening security situation in Nigeria. He calls on the president to do more to protect the lives and property of Nigerians.
This letter is a wake-up call to the president, to the service chiefs, to northern leaders. But, you know, the country is sinking. We know that if there's adequate security in the country, it will benefit the North as well, the South, and everybody in the country. You know, and that one of the driving force behind writing this letter is to put a halt to the incompetence in government and to see how the security architecture can be overhauled or re-overhauled. You know, and whatever needs to be done needs to be done urgently and now. You know, so that is the reason for this letter to the president.
But Deji, some Nigerians have said that Kaduna, for example, in the north, has the highest concentration of military outposts. So what really transpired is what a lot of Nigerians are asking about. Your response to that?
Yeah, this is beginning to look more like a business. Because you can't tell me that the entire security architecture, the intelligence, especially the SSS and other intelligence agencies in the country, are not aware. You know, these bandits, they move in hundreds of bites. So are you telling me that our efforts cannot locate them and, you know, and prevent them from carrying out attacks on the train? Because if the intelligence agencies in the country, they know of protests that we organize in this country. They infiltrate protests, they tear gas protesters, they prevent protests. Why are they scared of going to go and meet the terrorists to prevent the terrorist attack? Are they afraid of the terrorists? Are you telling me that these ragtag bandits are more powerful than the military, the Air Force, you know, the army itself, the police, you know, and all the security agencies in the country put together? They attack the airport in Kaduna. They attack the train. They attack the roads. They block the roads. They make Kaduna almost the epicenter of terrorism in the country. And this is where the highest security formations are in the country. You will recall that this same terrorist even attacked the military base in Kaduna and abducted, I think, a senior military officer.
The president has instructed the military to go on the offensive to ensure the protection of life and property. What is Concern Nigeria's reaction to that?
No, our reaction is that this is becoming too regular. This is becoming weak. reaction from the president. The president is always reassuring, reassuring, and further reassuring and vowing and further vowing all the time that things like this happen. Families have been lost. You know, members of families have been lost in these attacks. You know, a particular member or a particular family has mother, father, and four kids abducted. Four. We have many people who have been killed. A doctor, young promising doctor. Do you know what? How many shortage of doctors in the country? Promising people have been killed on this train. And several other people that have been abducted on a daily basis all across the length and breadth of the country. Look at the reported killing of 20 people just 2 hours ago in Niger State. So the president must, as a father, as our leader, as the head of the country, we are tired of criticizing the president. Now, what needs to be done? What can we do? That's why we are writing this letter to the president. The president must protect his people. The president is going to retire back to Kaduna. You know, the northerners, we are concerned. Southerners, kidnapping is on the rise in southern Nigeria. Banditry and terrorism is on the rise in northern Nigeria. We can't continue to fold our hands akimbo and do nothing.
The military often brief Nigerians about efforts to combat this terrorism, to bolster security in the country, to ensure Nigeria's territorial integrity is protected. The Nigerian police have been praised on occasions for doing its job by protecting people. So what is really happening here?
At Concern Nigeria, we don't mind if the president sacks the service chiefs weekly and acts as president at the same time. The DG of SS is failing, or people in the military are failing, or the police, the president, you sack them. The reason why the former president of the United States says the box up on my table is that he knows that whatever failings of government happens, that he will be blamed. So the president is blamed. The reason why Nigerians are blaming the president is because it's the president that hires these people, and he who hires fire. So if people are failing their responsibility, you will now say because you love the Nigerian police, he's failing his duty, you keep him on the job. You know, lives are being lost daily. People that we know are losing family members to insecurity. And incompetence is like a stray bullet. We don't know who is going to be the next victim.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener of Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law, a political pressure group. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Political pressure group Justice for Ghana has come out against a new tax on electronic transaction. The group says the law will worsen what it says are the poor prevailing economic conditions facing the average Ghanaian. The remarks come after the main opposition National Democratic Congress filed a petition at the Supreme Court to challenge the new measure recently passed by Parliament and signed into law by President Akufo-Addo. The government says the 1.5% electronic transaction levy, or e-levy, is expected to raise about $935 million each year. For more reaction to the new tax, I reached Bernard Mona, the leader of the political pressure group Justice for Ghana.
This is the most devastating news to come to the already suffering Ghanaians who are reeling under the harsh economic realities perpetuated by President Akufo-Addo. Electronic transactions levy, as he put it, but we call it electronic T3 levy, represents a confiscation of people's savings. E-levy cannot qualify under any form to represent a tax. At a time when our nation is in crisis and in turmoil, you expect the government to give and to provide reprieve for the citizens, particularly so when in opposition, President Akufo-Addo held the notion that we cannot tax ourselves to prosperity and that we will move away from taxation to production. E-levy certainly is not production. It is an insensitive way of extorting money from people, which you describe as tax.
But the government says there's need for local revenue generation in order to help it administer the affairs of the country effectively, including good roads, hospitals, and other developmental projects.
Well, since e-levy has become like the panacea to every challenge that we have in this country, what is the Ministry of Health budgetary requirement? What is the Ministry of Roads budgetary requirement? What is the Ministry of Agriculture budget requirement? And what is the Ministry of Education budget requirement? take just these four sectors of the economy and tell me that this e-levy is capable of attending to any of these sectors that I have attended to. In any case, the government of Ghana, through the 2022 budget statement, have said that it intends to mobilize 100 million or billion Ghana cedis. In return, the government is going to spend 137 billion Ghana cedis. In addition, is that the government is going to generate 80 billion of the 100 billion locally. So what it means is that the government itself has planned in excess of 57.5 billion deficit. That deficit means that it's going to be financed. Given that the government has overboarded over the period and that investor confidence in the country has declined, they want to use e-levy so that they can securitize the e-levy and use that as a bait for other investors or people to continue to raise money for the Republic of Ghana.
But Bernard, the government reduced public expenditure for top government officials. Isn't this demonstration?
You see, what you people do is that you take government rhetoric to mean reality. What are the specifics? Is it in terms of salary or capital expenditure? The budget for the office of the president for this year has been increased for over 500,000 Ghana cedis. Is that a reduction? National security budget has been ballooned. And so when government comes to make its rhetoric, we have reduced public expenditure by 20%. What are the specifics?
The opposition say they are going to fight it. They say the process in parliament was fraught with irregularity and nullity. Their words, not mine. What are civil society groups, including yours, opposed to this measure going to do about
that? Laws must be resisted with every energy at our command. And the Constitution says we should resist oppressors' rule. Take note that just this afternoon, the Minister for Finance acknowledging the fact that should the e-levy succeed, there is going to be a massive departure from people using their e-wallet into going into the banks. The minister said that if they see that people have moved and switched directly to going to the bank, they will devise a way to come to the banks to take money. He insists, as he put it, that it is a burden-sharing period. We did not participate in the enjoyment when they were enjoying. The people of Ghana did not participate in the 2.5% of every loan that the government of Ghana procured. That data bank that is owned by Ken Oforiatta, the Minister for Finance, they earn 2.5% as transaction advisors. The people of Ghana did not participate in that 2.5% share. Why should we participate when you have run the economy a ditch? So therefore, it is the responsibility of the government to bring in prudent measures that do not impose hardship on the people of Ghana.
Bernard Mona is the leader of the political pressure group Justice for Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Meanwhile, the Center for Democratic Development, or CDD Ghana, has signed a three-year agreement with the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency. Officials say the accord will establish a network aimed at coordinating and leveraging the power and influence of pro-democracy groups in West Africa. This, as many activists say, they want to stop the erosion of democracy in West Africa. The move follows recent coups in Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and a failed attempt to overthrow the government in Guinea-Bissau. To learn more about the prospects of the new partnership with the Center and the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, I reached Dr. Joseph Asante. He is the Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, or CDD Ghana.
The objective is really for us to help mobilize and coordinate civil society, pro-democracy civil society in West Africa, you know, to try to counter some of the backsliding that we have seen in the West Africa sub-region. Interestingly, you know, we've been thinking about how to organize ourselves, you know, a few years before the spate of coups that we've begun to see. So, I mean, we were always worried about some of the trajectory that we have seen with a number of countries in the sub-region. And unfortunately, it has gotten worse. So we've always thought that it was time for citizens themselves, you know, to organize around how they can sort of push back and hold the fort for democracy and development within the sub-region.
Will this help address concerns of what most people say appears to be a slide in democracy in West Africa, especially with the recent coups in some member countries of the economic bloc?
Yes. I mean, I think the missing point, you know, there has been a certain weakening of trust in sub-regional bodies to respond to, you know, country concerns around, you know, misgovernance, bad governance. And, you know, if you take what happened in Guinea, there was a number of years of, you know, misgovernance and concerns that were raised, and it didn't appear as if, you know, ECOWAS is able to respond effectively. Other bodies couldn't respond. And then we got, you know, the outcome that we have seen. We've seen what has happened in Mali and Burkina Faso. So we are building a structure. In the first year of the first phase of it, we're building a structure. It's a network. So we're trying to bring together some of the strong regional networks within the sub-region, like your ONEP, West Africa Network for Peace.
Talking about good neighborliness, will this mean that your partnership will work with ECOWAS, the regional body, in its effort to resolve some of these democratic and security challenges it faces?
Yes, and I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the two. ECOWAS as a body, I mean, you can see the kind of reaction that has come on with, you know, people, even within those countries, feeling that they had not gotten the kind of support they need from ECOWAS. But it's because ECOWAS also now have to review all its instruments, particularly the protocol on democracy, governance, and so on, and elections, because there are issues around third term dates and term limits issues that have to be addressed. We need to look at other provisions within the protocol. And we know that they're already looking at that. So this is the kind of work that we want to be able to bring our perspectives, our concerns, you know, to ECOWAS to make sure that we can craft legislation, you know, that can bite, but also look at the mechanisms that are in place for picking up these things, you know, way ahead, and to have the right tools for, you know, getting corrective measures. So there's a lot to do with ECOWAS in terms of its systems and processes and so on. But there's also a real challenge with security within the sub-region, with extremism, you know, in the Sahel, piracy on the coast and so on. And we are also very much interested in it, because without that, then a lot of these states are vulnerable. It opens it up, you know, to all kinds of actors, you know, that are coming, foreign actors that are coming from different places.
After the 3 years of this joint partnership, what will you want to see as the achievement of this objective that you've set for yourself?
So we would use the current phase to develop that clear strategy. But I think almost immediately, you know, countries like Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso, even the concerns we have about Guinea-Bissau, we have to be able to see that there's a clear, either the countries have transitioned back to democratic rule. Right now, there's a debate as to how long this transition should take place. But also, in terms of how the junta itself carries itself through that transition, there has to show that the things that they claim that they are coming to resolve, they are living it, even as they are governing during the transition period.
Dr. Kojo Asante is the Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, or CDD Ghana. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. DRC refugees who recently fled to Uganda to escape violence at home have been given an ultimatum: either return home voluntarily or go to a reception center to be registered and resettled. Uganda authorities say the refugees who have come near the DRC border pose a major health and security challenge. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
About 30,000 refugees are said to have fled fighting between the Democratic Republic of Congo Armed Forces and M23 rebels at the beginning of this week, with the guns going silent. Small numbers have been seen crossing the border back to their home country, but a big number remain at border towns on the Ugandan side. Douglas Asimwe is an acting commissioner for refugees in Uganda's office of the Prime Minister.
The majority of the population is still in a wait and see situation. We have resolved that we go and talk to them and express our concerns from the health perspective, congestion, the way they are living, inconveniencing other people in this township, so that they make their own informed choices to go to the holding center, Nyakabande Reception Center, or if they have made a choice to return back home, then they should move and go back home.
The refugees are decrying deplorable conditions of living. But Asimu says authorities are finding it hard to cater for the security and basic needs of those who have deliberately chosen not to go to the transit centers.
These people along the border, they are having no food, and the food is running out even if they came with the little food they had. And it's also very difficult for us to provide humanitarian assistance to this kind of population, which is scattered and not well documented. We cannot even account for that humanitarian assistance. We want to take them to where we can account for the humanitarian assistance we are giving them. But otherwise, the way they are, you don't know who is a Ugandan, who is a Congolese, who is...
According to Asimwe, the refugees have an option to relocate to the transit center or return home as per Uganda's laws.
No, we cannot take them by force. The security will come in and deal with that matter, headed by the resident district commissioner and the security, because they must comply with the rules and regulations of the country. They cannot come and make choices where they want to stay. They are no longer in Congo, they are in Uganda.
Captain Peter Mugisha is in charge of chairing security meetings in Uganda's Kisoro district. He says security officials have given assurance to the refugees that their home place is secure enough to return.
We have been asking them, is your area safe? They told us that the place is safe, they are not hearing anything, so people can go back. So we wanted them to move down to their people and tell them to go back since the area is now peaceful. Starting with today, they must be moving either back to Congo or to Nyakabande camp, because we cannot just keep them in that school where the children are supposed to attend the class.
Security sources say the fighting left 4 M23 rebels and 2 DRC soldiers dead, while about 10 rebels were captured. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The UN Refugee Agency says some 46,000 Congolese who fled violent clashes early this week in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province need emergency assistance. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The fighting, which erupted March 28th between M23, a rebel military group, and the Congolese army in Rutshuru territory in North Kivu province, sent an estimated 10,000 people fleeing for safety across the border into Uganda. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 36,000 other people are displaced within the Democratic Republic of Congo. Spokesman Boris Cheshikov tells VOA that UNHCR staff who were at the border to greet the newly arriving refugees could hear artillery fire in the background.
Some of the people coming through had gunshot wounds. They needed to be treated. Many of them found shelter in a nearby school and hospital with host families, but the vast majority were staying out in the open field. And at the same time, they were facing heavy rains, which were making conditions even worse.
Cheshikov says the UNHCR is working with the Ugandan government and humanitarian partners to provide basic assistance. He says some are being moved to transit centers along the Congolese border. He says most of the nearly 36,000 people displaced inside DRC are living with host families or in markets and schools. He adds security conditions are making it difficult to deliver aid to those people. Similar attacks launched by M23 rebels in the same area last November were quickly repulsed by the Congolese army. Cheshikov says a majority of some 11,000 refugees who fled to Uganda at that time returned to their homes in the DRC within 48 hours.
Different in this situation compared to the attacks in November is that people are still in Uganda, and this is 4 days after the attacks began, and they are needing increasing assistance. And because the rains are still falling and conditions are difficult, this raises the prospect of also the spread of disease, of many other needs rising.
Cheshikov says clashes in Rutshuru reportedly have subsided. While that is good news, he says conditions remain unstable, thus making it unlikely that the refugees will return home anytime soon. Until that happens, he says, the refugees will need international support to provide for their needs. He says the UNHCR will have difficulty providing the help because it is pinched for cash. So far this year, he says, UNHCR has received only 9% of the more than $343 million needed to run its Uganda operations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Rwanda aims to recruit nearly 500 Zimbabwean teachers by September under a memorandum of understanding the two countries signed last year. For VOA, Adegondo gives us more on the story from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The agreement on Rwanda recruiting Zimbabwean teachers is to be implemented in two stages, starting with those who teach English, science, technology, engineering and mathematics or STEM courses. Rwanda Education Board Director General Nelson Mbarushimana revealed the agreement at the Zimbabwe-Rwanda Trade and Investment Conference in Harare, which wrapped up on April 1st. Zimbabwean teachers are part of the civil service and have been embroiled in a long wage dispute with the government over salaries and working conditions. Some teachers are concerned that the deal with Rwanda will undermine schools in Zimbabwe. Obed Masaraure is a STEM teacher himself and the Secretary General of the Agricultural Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
Just last week, the spokesperson of the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education reported that Zimbabwe has an acute shortage of STEM teachers. We have schools in Manicaland province which have gone for over 2 years without getting a STEM teacher because of a critical shortage. So it is a ridiculous contradiction where you find a nation which is battling to have teachers in its own schools, exporting teachers to other nations. What are we saying about our own education? This is an indictment on the government of Emmerson Mnangagwa.
The Minister of Primary and Secondary Education last week announced that the country is faced with an acute shortage of STEM teachers.
They don't care about the education of their own people. They are prepared to export teachers to other countries. We should have expected them to really become a competitive employer, try to retain quality teachers in our schools, and try even to attract better teachers in our schools. But most importantly, what are the contents of the agreement signed between the Zimbabwean government and the Rwandese government? Are we guaranteeing that these teachers, when exported, they are still going to enjoy their labor rights according to International Labor Organization standards? Because we don't want our government to become a slave trader, selling our teachers to be slaves in another republic. We want them to continue to enjoy their fundamental rights when they go into another jurisdiction. And we know this government might not even pay attention to detail.
Some teachers will say the government has long ignored their demands for better salaries and working conditions. Welcome the development. Tando Nwule, a teacher in Bulawayo, is among those who welcome the Rwandan government announcement.
I think going to Rwanda is a great opportunity for us, the Zimbabwean teachers, because the salaries that are being offered in Rwanda are far much better than what we are getting in Zimbabwe. I also see it as an advantage again, because traveling costs, that is true and from, will be covered by the Rwandan government. Accommodation is also provided for.
STEM teachers make up about 10% of Zimbabwe's total teacher population of around 141,000 teachers. Reporting for VOA, this is Adegondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Fighting between Ethiopia's federal government and forces from the Tigray region has displaced more than 2 million people since November 2020, according to the UN. This year, the fighting has shifted to the country's Afar region, displaced more Ethiopians as well as refugees from neighboring Eritrea seeking safety. For VOA, Vinicius Assis reports from Afdera in Ethiopia's Afar region.
Eritrean refugee Juma Ali Muhammad has been living peacefully in Ethiopia for 15 years. But in early February, fighting between Ethiopian Federal Force, their allies, and Tigrayan forces spread to Afar, sending Juma and her family fleeing for safety. In the confusion, she was separated from her husband and two of their children. She now lives with three other children at a former salt deposit. Juma says during the escape, her husband and their other kids took a different way. Now, she says, she is struggling along with the three children. The UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, says thousands of refugees like Juma were displaced by fighting in Afar. Astrid Castellan is the agency's senior emergency coordinator in Afar.
The security in the area is very volatile, especially in at the border with between Tigray and Afar region. And indeed, not later than February, this has caused displacement of 20,600 Eritrean refugees, but also 300,000 people from Afar region. So we remain very concerned.
50-year-old Saleh Ali Muhammad and a few relatives also fled the town of Abala in February with only the clothes on their backs. They are also living at the former South Deposit and sleeping on the floor. Saleh says they left everything in Abala. He says he is in the shelter with his daughter and her children, but his wife and the rest of his family are missing. Others displaced from Abala found shelter at a former high school, with classrooms turned into bedrooms. Broken glass is scattered about a makeshift shelter, while children displaced by the fighting walk around barefoot. Aisha Said Muhammad's husband was killed fighting against the rebels near Abala. She says he was a farmer and joined the militia to defend the town. After 2 days, he was shot and died. She said they didn't even have time to bury him. A humanitarian truce announced on March 24 has raised hopes that aid can get through to those in need. Despite the truce, more fighting has been reported in Afar region this week. Meanwhile, Afar's displaced make the best on their shelter and hope it's only temporary. Vinicius Assis for VOA News, Afdera, Ethiopia.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Still alive with life.
That's more hope. Join the happy people.
Make yourself happy while you're still alive with life.
That's more hope. Join the happy people. Joy and harmony
is taking you higher.
Music is ready to heal your soul.
Sweet Africa.
my brothers, let me hear you sing. I love how you.
Not consider getting pregnant at this time.
Yeah, I go to anything.
You promise to stand by me. Promise we will stand together. Oh yeah. Oh people. And no matter where we day, you go always in my mind. And I go to
Ma chérie, you smile for me when you wake up and the morning bends you up. You touch me slowly, na cheka cheka mwenzio. You keep me falling, mpenzi wangu. Na kwenye giza, giza totoro, wendo mwangaza wangu. Chuma wangu, wakupapasia. You don't say, I love you too much, oh. Baby, you don't say, I need you too much, oh. Ya ruhi habibi, hey, I love you. Ah, ya ruhi habibi, hey, I love you. Baby, kwa penzi lako, oh, 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 oh. Nangara gara bibi, oh, 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 oh. Kwa penzi.
Tumemshinda shetani baby, tumewashinda mahasidi, tumewashinda mahayawani.
Oh hala hala,
kitanda kiwe sahani mpenzi, nikule nikufaidi, nichoshe niwe tabani.
Oh hala hala,
mimi mtoto wa udongo, mvua siziwezi, kilema nsipie na magongo, na chechemea
chechemea.
Dumange tupige msondo, unirutishe enzi, na mimi anze ndondondo, unyemelea
nyemelea.
Ja bless my love,
amen.
Bless my baby, oh,
amen.
Bless my one and all,
amen.
For I am,
amen.
Adonai,
amen.
From the sun and the moon,
amen.
Midnight and the noon,
amen.
Nilingi kipenzi changu, wasije
wakanibia.
Ah, ya ruhi habibi, hey, I love you. Ah, ya ruhi habibi, hey, I love you.
Baby, kwa penzi lako, oh, 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 oh.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love?
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Mohamed Al-Shanawi and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a hunter who returns from the forest with a goat is a thief. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.